issue is that there is a din in a chumash that we're not allowed to eat bugs or worms. Sheretz. There are three categories of sheretzim: the sheretz hamayim, the sheretz ha'of, and the sheretz ha'oretz. Sheretz hamayim means non-kosher fish. Anything that swims that doesn't have snap of the kaskasis is called sheretz hamayim. A whale. There are a lot of non-kosher fish. Well, non-kosher fish, anything that swims in water is that doesn't have snap of the kaskasis is sheretz hamayim. Sheretz ha'oretz, any animal that crawls on the ground, let's say lions, tigers, horses, donkeys, mules, this is non-kosher animals that don't have malager, mafiz parasa, is sheretz. We usually talk about sheretz, tiny little bugs, ants, these kind of things. That sheretz, Tosfos writes in Erevin, it's only visible when it runs. Sheretz, the reason why you call it sheretz. It's only noticeable when it runs. Then you have sheretz ha'of, you have a non-kosher bird. The Torah tells us which are the non-kosher birds, and the Mishnah Kulin, the Perek El Treifis, tells you how can you tell if a bird is kosher. So any bird that's not kosher, there are simonim, three or four simonim, different opinions in Shulchan Aruch. So any bird that's not kosher is called sheretz ha'of. So the truth of the matter is, the Maharam Shik writes like this, that every body of water in the world has copepods in it, has these little tiny translucent bugs. You can't really, when you look at a cup of water, you can't see the bugs. But when they're still alive, if you have a bucket of water that you take from the New York City reservoir, it'll look like a fish swimming in a fish tank. You can't see them, they're translucent. But you'll see them swimming around. So that's sheretz. So that's a real issue. The reason why we can't see these bugs in a cup of water is because the water shoots with such a pressure and it bangs against the pipes. When it comes from the reservoir to the tap, it bangs against pipes. So all of these translucent bugs are dead already. But you're not allowed to eat a dead bug either. The din is that a sheretz that's not visible to the naked eye is not an issur sheretz. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes a double posh like that. He didn't discover this. All the posh can write like that. Whatever is not visible to the naked eye is mutter, because whenever you eat anything, there are always microorganisms and the microscopic things that you can't see with the naked eye. You can only see under a microscope. So of course it's mutter. It's only usher if it's nira l'ayin. Nira l'ayin doesn't mean, let's say if I know the government gives grades to the restaurants, so some of them say A, some of them say B. So let's say, I know that there's a restaurant where they're not careful, and they're sloppy and they have bugs in the soup. So if you just don't turn on the lights in the restaurant, only have a little candle, and don't look at what you eat, and just eat whatever you don't see won't hurt you. That's not what it means. It means a bug that's not visible to the naked eye. If you'll try to look for it, you won't be able to see it. If it's microscopic, so then the din is that it's mutter. But if it's visible to the naked eye, sometimes a person has especially good eyes. He has extremely good vision. So that also doesn't count. It means the average person. An Adam Beinoni wouldn't be able to see this. Whatever is not visible to the naked eye, the halacha doesn't worry about. Take for example, I remember once after Shacharis, I was davening in Broye, so a dentist came over to me, and he asked me whether his tefillin were kosher, whether the tefillin have to be square. So he asked me how the tefillin merubos. So I looked at it, I took out a piece of paper from my pocket, I started to measure the length and the width. I said, yeah, it's merubos. So he tells me it's not. So what do you mean it's not? So he says, he's so used to filling, to making teeny weeny fillings, his eye is like a precision instrument, and he can tell by looking at something, right away he can tell that it's not square. But to the naked eye, if you take a plain ruler, to the naked eye, it is square. He had unusual vision. He could tell that it's not. So that Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in his sefer, the tefillin have to be square, and a bug is awesome. It's not, all these dinim depend on the normal eyesight. If a normal person with normal eyesight can't see the bug, then it's mutter. The question is, what if you can see a black spot, a black speck, but you can't identify it as a bug? unless you use a magnifying glass. Is that considered near al ayin or not? It is visible, but it's not. He can't detect that it's a bug. So Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was quoted as having said that he thinks that that's permissible. That's not called near al ayin. He just heard that in the Chazon Ish's home they used to be machmer on that. So the question is, what did the end of the sentence mean? So there's a rabbi in Eretz Yisrael who's known as the bug rabbi, Rabbi Vaya, who makes a whole tumult about all these things. So he says, what Reb Shlomo Zalman said, you see the Chazon Ish didn't need it. So you see that he changed his mind. Shlomo Zalman gave in to the Chazon Ish, he holds that it's us. The Pashup Shat in the statement doesn't mean like that. Reb Shlomo Zalman said he thinks that it's mutter, and he doesn't understand why the Chazon Ish, but they said, Shalach Chazon Ish, they didn't need it. It doesn't make any sense. Out of respect for the Chazon Ish, he didn't say it doesn't make sense. He just said, I hold it's mutter, and I heard that the base of Shalach Chazon Ish, they wouldn't need it. But he held that it doesn't make sense. It's only usher if the bug is noticeable. Yeah. So years ago, in the United States, the farmers used to use pesticide, so it was extremely rare that you would find a bug on any vegetables, because all the farmers would spray this stuff. In recent years, the last 40 years, the government doesn't permit the use of pesticides anymore, so it became a big issue. A lot of the vegetables have bugs in them, so it's a problem eating the bugs. Then in the water, all of the Maharam Shik writes, every body of water in the world, every river, every lake, every ocean, they all have these copepods, these little bugs. The only thing is, he writes that it's usually a neochain or matsui. Usually it's a rare thing, so you don't have to worry about it. He's writing to somebody. Somebody sent him a letter. Then in his city, it's very common that when you draw a cup, they didn't have faucets with running water like we have. They used to draw water from the river. Buckets of water. So it was very common that they had these copepod sticks. So he writes, if in your city it's a miyot hamotzi, then the din requires that you have to filter the water. What's the story with the miyot hamotzi, miyot chain hamotzi? So this is a Ramban in the beginning of Chulin. Who was discussing the following topic. The Gemara says that if somebody shechts a behema, he has to know hilcha shechita. If a person does know hilcha shechita, also lechol mishchitase, he's not allowed to eat the flesh. He may have made it in the vela without him realizing it. What if a person shechts a behema and then he goes away? And I don't know if he knows hilcha shechita. I have no idea. So the Gemara says, we assume rov mitzui meitza shechita mumchime. We assume if the guy took it upon himself, a person doesn't walk in to do something unless he knows what a normal person doesn't. Except upon himself to do something if he doesn't know what he's doing. So if a person shechts a behema and he disappears and we don't know one way or the other whether he knows hilcha shechita or not, we assume that rov mitzui meitza shechita mumchime. What if he didn't yet disappear? Guy shechts a behema and he's here. So do we have to faher him? Do we have to give him a test to see if he knows hilcha shechita? So there's a big discussion in the Rishonim. Many Rishonim say yes, we shouldn't rely on the rov mitzui meitza shechita mumchime whenever it's efshel livdok. Where did they get this idea from? The Gemara doesn't say in Chulin. So the Ramban says the sources are Gemara and Psochim. The Gemara in the first paragraph of Psochim has a Shaila. Someone rents an apartment from another Orthodox Jew on Erev Pesach in the morning. Yudalid Nissan. So the din is that the owner of the apartment, the landlord, was supposed to be by the Chametz. Everyone was supposed to be by the Chametz Lel Yudalid. Or the Abbas had bought Kimasal Chametz or on there. So the owner of the apartment should have been buying comments last night. So Gemara has a shaila, do I have the right to assume that since the owner, the landlord, is an Orthodox Jew, he probably did bedikas comments. There's no need for me to be buying comments. Should I say, Asecha bayis l'chaver cheskosa baduk? I should have the right to assume a chazaka means a ruba delisa kamon, that the landlord was buying comments. Or maybe I should say, no, I can't rely on that right. Is there such a right or not? So the Gemara says, what are you philosophizing? Call up the landlord and ask him whether he's by the comments. What's the big problem? Gemara says the landlord is not available. He doesn't have a cell phone, and he went away for yontif. Whatever, he's not here. And we don't know. Do we have the right to rely on chasach chazok? So the Ramban asks, why does the Gemara say lamay nafkemina l'shaile? Why don't you ask him? It's embarrassing. I don't want to ask him. If the din is that you have the right to assume that the rove of the Orthodox Jews are by the chametz. So I don't have to ask him. Why did Gemara say, what's the difference whether there is such a rov or not? Why don't you ask him? I don't want to have to ask him. So the Ramban says, you see from that Gemara, that when, even though you have a roiv, lahakel, if it's easy to ascertain that it's that these are the facts, so you should be boiting. That's how it says Shulchan Aruch, before a person puts on the tzitzis, before he says the bracha, v'sata b'tzitzis, he should check to make sure that the strings didn't rip, because maybe the strings ripped and the tzitzis are puzzled and it's going to be a bracha l'batol. So the Ramban says, and you always have to be boiting, every single time you have to be boiting. So he quotes a medrash that says, you don't always have to be boiting. There is a, the Gemara assumes that roi behemus haksheris. Most animals, when you sheft an animal, there are 70 different diseases in an animal that can cause the whole animal to be a trefa. So the Gemara says, roiv of the animals, the majority of the animals, are not trefas. So you have a right to rely on the roiv. The minig is, the practice is, the Rambam quotes a medrash like that, the practice is that after we sheft an animal, we check the lungs to make sure that there are no sirchas on the lungs, that there are no adhesions. In the lungs, you have several different lobes, like big balloons, and when the animal breathes in the air, so the balloons expand, and then when it breathes out, so the air goes out. But human beings are the same way. So if you have like a chewing gum stuck from one to the other, that's a sircha, so that'll sometimes make a trefa, and sometimes not make a trefa. So the Ramban quotes a medrash that says that we only are, the meaning is you only check for sirchas on the lungs, you don't check for the other 69 kinds of trefas. The context of the medrash is a very fascinating one. The Ramban Chulin quotes this medrash that Adam Marishan was created the sixth day of Sheshes and Bereishis, and then the next day was Shabbos. The same day he was created, he was instructed not to eat from the Eitz Hadas. He ate from the Eitz Hadas an hour after. He didn't have self-control. An hour after he was instructed, he told Chava not to eat. An hour afterwards, he ate from the Eitz Hadas. They were judged on the same day, and they were chased out of Gan Eden on the same day. So the medrash says, a fascinating medrash, it was Erev Shabbos. If they would have waited till Leil Shabbos, it would have been permissible to eat from the Eitz Hadas. How did the medrash know? I don't know. That's what it says. If they would have waited till Friday night, it would have been permissible to eat from the Eitz Hadas. They didn't even have self-control for a couple of hours, so they violated the din. So the medrash says, "Mi gala ofer meinecho adam arishon." This is an expression that Tanoim use in different places. We ought to dig up Adam Rishon from the grave and open up his eyes and show him. The Jewish people have self-control. We plant the tree, and the tree gives off, bears fruits, and we don't eat the fruits the first 3 years. It's our law. Usually nothing grows the first 3 years, but even if something does grow, we wouldn't eat it because it's our law. And then the Medrash says, a woman becomes a nida, and the husband waits a week and a half till she goes to the mikveh, till she's able to go to the mikveh, and we shecht an animal, and we don't eat the flesh right away. We wait till we're biting the lungs to make sure that there are no sirchas, and then we eat the animal. So the Jewish people have self-control. We can contain ourselves, we can wait. So therefore, the Medrash says, Adam Rishon had no self-control. He wasn't able to wait. There were, in Yiddish folklore, there was such a practice in Europe that a pregnant woman would bite off the pitam of the esrog if the sukkah was over, and then she would offer a prayer. She would offer a prayer to the Ribbono Shel Olam that the punishment that women suffer when they have babies was because of the sin of eating from the Eitz Hadas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished Chava, and he said, the etzev tel dibonim, you're going to have pain when you have children. So, and the reason for the punishment was because Chava didn't have self-control. She didn't wait. If she would have waited, the Medrash claims, if she would have waited till Friday night, it would have been mutter. So the pregnant woman waits till after Sukkot is over, and then she bites off the pitam, then she eats the esrog. And the Medrash have one opinion, and the Medrash is that the Eitz Hadas was an esrog. The esrogim that the Ashkenazim use are like lemons, they don't taste good. So obviously it wasn't that kind of an esrog. It was like a tamani esrog that tastes delicious, like a good citrus fruit, that like an orange that tastes good. So the folklore had it that the pregnant woman would wait till after Sukkot over and say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, look, if I would have been there and gone Eden, I would have waited for Haraya. Look, I waited 8 days till after Sukkot is over. So I shouldn't be punished because of the sin of Chava, but I should not have any pain. I shouldn't have any complications. I shouldn't have any pain when I give birth to the child. So that's what this funny minig is based on, that the pregnant woman bites off the pit and after Sukkot is over. So that's the whole story of the Eitz Hadas. So the Ramban has to explain this line in the Medrash. Why does the Medrash say, we shecht an animal, we don't run to eat the meat right away, we wait till we check that they're not sirchas on the lungs. Why do they only check sirchas on the lungs? What about the other 69 trefa? Said Shulchan Aruch, there's 70 possibilities of diseases that can make the animal a trefa. So Ramban postulates a klal. He says the only time you're mukhiyev, the roiv is that there are no trefas. That's how the Gemara says. Roiv behem is k'sher v'sein. So why can't you follow the roiv? So he says, men atori, you're allowed to follow the roiv. Men the rabbanon, there's a chumra. Whenever there's a miut hamatsui, whenever it's a significant miut, the chumra, so then there's a chayvus bedikah mid the rabbanon. So the Ramban says, the other 69 trefas are so unlikely, you're not even mukhiyev to be bodied. Unless an animal fell down a flight of stairs, and you're afraid that falls down something off a cliff. So then maybe the ribs are broken, maybe there's a puncture in the lungs. If something happened, if there's a latest or something happened, then you got to check to see that the ribs didn't puncture a hole in the lungs and so on. But if you have a normal animal and you shech, the only thing you have to be worried about is the sirchas on the lungs, because that's a miut hamotzei. Sure. So this. And the same is true regarding the Maram Shiksa, the same is true regarding water. He says that every body of water in the world, every river, every lake, they all have these copepods that are translucent, so it's very hard to see them. When they're alive, you can see them. They swim around, it looks like fish in a fish tank. But when they're dead, by us, they're all killed because of the force of the water banging against the pipe. So they're all dead by us, so you can't see them. The Achraidim have such a discussion, the Darkei Tshuva, by the Munkacha, and Simon Pei Dalet, the other day, quotes one of the Svarim, who writes like this, he lived in a community where the water had these copper pots. So whenever you would have a cup of water, it would look like the fish swimming around in the fish tank. So he had a simple solution, he'll cook all the water. Once you cook the water, they're all dead. So they're dead, so they don't swim around anymore. So it's not visible to the naked eye. So it's mutter. So he says, no, that's a joke. Before you cooked the water, they were visible to the, they weren't really visible, but you would see them swishing around in the water, swimming. So that's what Tosfos says in Erev, and that's sherutz. When it runs, so you do see it. So that is nearer the eye. So it doesn't help if you're going to cook it, you're going to kill it later on. Since while it was alive, it was visible. It's not microscopic, so that is considered nearer the eye. So the Maram Shik writes, every body of water has these copepods, but all over the world, it's always a miut she'ein hamotzei. It's highly unlikely. He writes to the Shoyel, if in your community you think that it's a miut hamotzei, so then of course you have to be bodik, you have to filter the water to remove the bugs. So the question is, what percentage of a likelihood do you need that you're eating a bug that it should be considered a miut hamotzei? What percentage of all animals have a sircha on the lung that makes it a trefa? What percentage does it have to be? So it's interesting, this whole concept of percentages, probabilities, in mathematics, this is a very recent thing. In the days of the Ramban, the world of mathematics never heard of this probabilities. So that's why there are professors of math who don't believe that that's what it means in halacha. But the Mishkanes Yankiv, who lived in the 1800s, Mishkanes Yankiv is a sefer, Shadash Chubas, written by Rabbi Yankala Karlina. He was the rabbi in Karlin. Karlin was a Chassidish city, but he was a Misnagit. Karlin Chassid, Stalin Chassid, lived there. Karlin Stalin are twin cities, like Bergenfield and Teaneck. One just spills into the other. So you just walked 5 blocks and you were in Stalin. You walked back here in Karlin. So the Mishkanes Yankiv was the Talmud of Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner in the beginning when they founded Volozhiner Yeshiva in 1802, whatever it was there. So he has in his tshuvas, he claims that the pshat and the Ramban, pshat and the Shulchan Aruch, miut hamotzei means probabilities. He claims that the Jews always knew about probabilities, and it means 10% or above. And he claims this based on the Gemara Bava Basra. He claims that miut hamotzei means 10% or above. What percentage of all the animals have sircha on the lung that makes it a trefa? So Rabbi Soloveitchik used to teach here in the yeshiva, used to give a hashgacha on a slaughterhouse in Boston. And he said he used to be mekel in Hilchas Trefes, he used to use his expression, he used to use all the kulas on the book, plus more. He used to be more mekel than others. He had kulas from the Balatanya, from the Shulchan Aruch Rav of the Balatanya. So he used to be a big mekel on Trefes. But he said in his slaughterhouse, where he was mekel, they used to have 14% of all animals that were slaughtered had sirchas that he couldn't be mekel on. He would just he would have a comment that there were glatt kosher slaughterhouses, where they weren't mekel as much as he was, and he asked them, what percentage sirchas do they have? 9%. So how is that possible? I have 14% and I'm mekel on everything. How can you? So he said, glat kosher means glat rev. They don't know what they're talking about. You can't rely on the glat kosher, they're fake. So Rabbi Soloveitchik thought that, like the Mishkanos Yankov, that was the accepted opinion for many years, that the Darkei Tshuva by the Munkach, and Yeridei quotes this, that Mil Tamotze means 10% or above. And he said, indeed, in America, where in Boston, where in the slaughterhouse, used to be 14% of all geshachtene animals had were trefa because of sirchas on the lungs. In different countries, they keep records for many, many years of what percentage of the animals that they shechted are trefas. In Eretz Yisrael, it happens that the percentage of animals that are trefas because of sirchas on the rear is only 7%. Apparently, the air in America is more contaminated than the air in Eretz Yisrael. So that's why we have a higher percentage of trefas. Hasidim like to eat buffalo meat because they like to eat glat kosher. Glat kosher means that you weren't mekel on anything. The Ashkenazim amekel, if you can easily peel off the sircha and there won't be a hole on the lung, so that's not considered a sircha, that's a trefa. So they would peel off the sircha, they would take an hour to peel off the sircha slowly and then put the lung submerged underwater, and then they would blow through the windpipe to see whether bubbles would come up, whether there's a hole or not. And the Svardim, the Mechaber, is Machmanan. That's called glat kosher. Glat means smooth. That the lung was smooth, that you didn't remove any sircha. If it's very easily removable, you don't have to keep on rubbing and rubbing and rubbing to remove it, then even Rabbi Yosef Karo says that it's not called the sircha. But if it's not easily removable, you have to have miut or mishmush, you have to keep on rubbing and rubbing. It takes an hour to remove it. So then the mechaber is machmer, that you have to have glat kosher, and the ramor is mekel. That's okay. So so they always kept the... So the Hasidim are machmer, even though they're Ashkenazim, they're machmer to only have glat kosher. So buffalo apparently are not as affected by the beard, by the contaminated air, so they hardly have any sirchas on them. So if you're looking for glat kosher, so it's best to place your money on buffalo. The question is, maybe you shouldn't eat buffalo. The buffalo is malagera, mafis parsa, as the simonim, but the shach sounds like he says, in one place, Dushach sounds like he says you shouldn't eat an animal based on simanim of malager, mafis parsa, unless we have a tradition that it's a kosher animal. So the American buffalo, they never had in Europe. They never had this kind. They're different kinds of buffalo. This kind of buffalo, they never had. So that's a question. How different is the buffalo from a normal cow? Maybe the tradition, that the minig that we always had, that we always ate cows, maybe that masora carries over to the buffalo as well. That's a whole hullabaloo. That's a whole question. So again, getting back to an Eretz Yisrael, when they've kept records for quite a while already now, what percentage of all the animals have sirchas on the lungs that make them a trip? So there it's only 7%. It's not more than 15%. It's only 7%. So Rabbi Yashiv said a chumrah, that if you have a certain vegetable, and it's a 7% chance that by eating, you're not going to eat a ton of the vegetable. You don't eat 5 pounds of the vegetable. You eat a little bit in one session, in one meal. So if, according to the portion that you're going to eat, there's a 7% likelihood that you'll be eating a bug, so that's called mil tamotze, and it then requires you have to be bodek. You have to check it before you eat it. And according to the way it's usually assumed, it's not considered mil tamotze unless you have a 10% likelihood that you're going to find a bug. Several years ago, I was in Eretz Yisrael, so we were talking to Rabbi Neuwirth, the one who wrote the Shmir Shabbos Kel Chosa, about a related topic, not about this. So he mentioned to us that there was a period of time, now he's an old man already, but there was a period of time when he was younger and healthier, that he used to travel to Argentina every so often to supervise the shechita on the meat, because at that time they hardly had any shechita in Eretz Yisrael. He used to import all the meat from Argentina. So he says there in Argentina, the fact they also kept records for many, many years, the incidence of trefas, of sirchas on the lung is only 5%. So he says, so what, we're going to be machmer to say whenever there's 5% likelihood of doing an aver, it's called miyot hamatzah? He doesn't think so. He says, maspik, it's enough, it'll be machmer like Rav Al Yashiv. The 7% is called miyot hamatzah. Everybody else is makel 10%. Anything less than 10% is called miyot she'en hamatzah. So Rav Al Yashiv who passed away in the summertime, he was always a machmer on everything. When he was in the Rabbanut, he had to cater to the clientele, so he had to be mekel. When he was in the Bezna, he had to mekel. And then after he retired, he didn't feel obligated to be mekel anymore. So those who asked him, so he used to always recommend you should be machmer. So he came up with this chumra, the 7%, because in Eretz Yisrael, it's only 7% of all the animals that they shecht have psichus on the bones. Whatever it is. So that's the issue, let's say. So the Maram Shik writes, every body of water in the world has these copepods, but usually it's a mere chain of matzah. The reason being, because the copepods usually are on the bottom of the lake, the bottom of the river, the bottom of the ocean. So normally when you would draw water, they didn't have a system, a pipe, faucets with pipes and everything. So people would go draw water, so they drew water from the top of the lake, the top of the river. So the top of the river hardly has any copepods, so it's a mere chain of matzah. But now we have a system where we have pipes, and the pipes are all the way in the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, or whatever, the bottom of the reservoir. So the bottom of the reservoir, that's where all of these copepods are located. So in certain areas in Europe, certain areas in America, it's a miut hamatzui. It may or may not be a miut hamatzui that you're going to have a copepod in your cup of water, even if you're just going to drink one cup of water. So that's a shame. Let's say 10%. Is there a 10% chance that you're going to have? So they, when this whole story began a few years ago, so they were testing here in Washington Heights. So they found that one out of every 8 cups of water has a copepod in it. One out of 8 cups is more than 10%. One out of 10 would be 10%. One out of 8 is more than 10%. But the question is, in Borough Park and certain in Flatbush, certain streets at certain times of the day would be a miut hamatzui, and other parts of the day wouldn't be a miut hamatzui. It depends how many people are showering, how many people are washing dishes, and so on. So if it depends which part of the day, so that, and you have to know which side of the block you live, this side, that side. Is that called a miut hamatzui? That's questionable. So that's questionable. So in the United States, every city that has a population of over 10,000 is required by law to filter the water. So in all the cities in the United States, is no problem. New York is one of the 3 lucky winners. New York and Boston and what's the one on the West Coast? Seattle. I think these are the 3 cities that have over 10,000 population and they don't filter the water. So when this whole story came about, that they came to the realization that in New York there are a lot of copepods in the water because the pipes that bring us the water are all the way at the bottom of the reservoir, not on the top of the reservoir. So the Aguda had a meeting with the government and some wealthy Jew wanted to fund that they should filter the water. So they told him how much it would cost, $several billion. So he backed up. He's not gonna fund it. He thought it would cost $10,000, $20,000. They'll be happy to donate the filter. So it's too expensive, so they didn't do it. So that's the Shaila. The Maram Shik has a discussion, are you allowed to filter the water on Shabbos? There's a Malacha Borer. So the Chaye Yodam writes in Hilcha Shabbos, Borer is only if you separate Psolus from the Yochel. Psolus means something that people wouldn't want to eat. So he says, all the Goyim drink the water the way it is. The Halacha says, we're not allowed to drink the water if you know that it has bugs in it. But since all the going drink the water tastes delicious, there's no problem. So that's not called psolus. Psolus is only if in mitzias it's psolus. But if alpi halacha you're not allowed to drink it, that's not called psolus. The Maram Shik disagrees with the Chayyarim. He doesn't quote the Chayyarim. They were contemporaries. He doesn't quote the Chayyarim, but he disagrees. He says many had a practice to filter all the water they would use for cooking or drinking for Pesach, because chametz b'Pesach is b'mashu. But he says, Mikir Adin, you don't have to filter the water just because chametz is mashu. There is no chametz in the water. So he says, since that's only a chumra, Mikir Adin is no need for it. So that's not called oichel and psoilus. That's not called psoilus because they imagine that maybe there's chametz. But he says, if you live in a city where there's a miut hamatzui of these copepods in the water and the din requires that you have to filter, that's the chumra that the Ramban explained. That whenever there's a miut hamatzui, whenever there's 10% or more, 7% or more likelihood that you're going to be violating another area, even though min haTorah you have a right to go basaroyv and assume that it's the 90%, 85%, but min the Rabbanan there's a chumra, you have to be boidek. So since with the Rabbanan you are required to filter the water, so the Maharshi calls that it is bor. It is a malacha bor. Here in New York, there are different dodim lahokel to filter the water on Shabbos. Number one, not all bugs are rasa. The Gemara in the last daf in Perek Elu Treifus, in Perek Elu Treifus, the third Perek of Masechas Chulin, so the Perek begins with all the dinam of treifus. When is a bird a treifa? When is an animal a treifa? The first two Prokim and Chulin talk about how to shecht an animal. If you don't shecht it properly, it'll be an avela. But if you did shecht it properly, it's not an avela, but it has a disease, so certain diseases will label the animal as a treifa. And then at the end of Perek Elu Treifus, they discuss how do you identify which animals are kosher, malagia and mafis parsa. And how do you identify which fish are kosher? So that depends on snapa v'kaskesis. And then how do you identify which birds are kosher? So the Chumash doesn't say, so the Mishnah tells you how do you identify. Then there's a discussion of which chalev is also. Pesukim v'Chumash say certain parts of chalev, certain chalovim of the animal are also certain amutas, and the Mishnayos and the Gemara talks about chalev. And the last daf and a half in Perek Elu Treifus talks about the bugs. Which bugs Arasa. So the Gemara says, based on Pesukim Chumash, that the Chumash says, Kol ha-shalos snapi v'kaskes bayamim of anacholim. You require snapi v'kaskeses for fish that they should be kosher if it's bayamim of anacholim. And all the worms in the water don't have snapi v'kaskeses. So that's called sheretz hamayim. So the Gemara says it's only by yamim v'anacholim. Certain bodies of water, let's say I have a cup of water and there were no bugs in it, and then it's sitting long enough, and then so all of a sudden develops bugs. So how did it develop a bug? Where did it come from? The Yeshma? No, it probably means that there was an egg. There was a microscopic egg there, and it was sitting in the sun, and then the egg hatched, and it developed, and it turned into a worm, or into a bug. So now it's visible. Now it's no longer microscopic. When it was an egg, it was microscopic. So it was mutter to drink the water. And then when it develops into a worm, now you're not allowed to drink it. So the Gemara says, no, water in a cup, and the worm develops, the water doesn't turn into a worm. Obviously, there was an egg there that was microscopic. So that's mutter, that you're allowed to drink, with the worm in it. Unless the worm crawled out of the cup, then it crawled back in, so then it's also pirish, then it's also. And then the Gemara talks about even if you have a well that has water in it, not a river, if you have a well that just collects rainwater, and the rainwater doesn't have bugs in it, but it has invisible eggs, and then the water in the well is sitting long enough until some of those invisible eggs develop and they become worms, so those worms are also mutter. In fact, in the 1500s, the 1550s, when Rabbi Yosef Karo lived in Tzfas, so the majority of the Jewish population in Eretz Yisrael lived in Tzfas, much more than in Yerushalayim. Why was that so? Why did they all choose to move to Tzfas? So there are two reasons. One is a Kabbalistic reason and one is a health reason. The Kabbalistic reason was that the Gemara has a tradition that Eliyahu HaNavi will appear to the Bezn HaGadol the day before Mashiach comes, and he will identify who is the Melech HaMashiach. And where will the Bezn HaGadol appear? We don't have any Bezn HaGadol. We haven't had Bezn HaGadol for a long, long time. The Gemara said the Bezn HaGadol disbanded 40 years before the destruction of the Second Temple. The Second Temple was destroyed the year 70. So 40 years before was the year 30, so the Bezn HaGadol disbanded. So the Gemara says, but they kept on meeting even after the destruction of the Second Temple. They would reconvene from time to time. And the Gemara says, in Tveri, Unushan, Shvaram, and Sipari, over there, everything in the Galil, the northern part of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, and the Rambam quotes this, the last location where the Bezn HaGadol convene, somewhere in the Galil, that's where they'll reconvene when the time comes. Like any day, the Bezn HaGadol sits all day long, and then they go home to eat dinner with their wives, they go to sleep, and they come back, they reconvene the next day. So now also, it'll be a pause of over 1,000 years, wherever the last location was that they convene, they'll reconvene over there. That's why several years ago, Rabbi Steinsaltz with a group of 70 Rabbanim convened in Tveri, I think, and they put together a Sanhedrin. They said, they're the Sanhedrin, they're reconvening in the old look at the same location, the last location, it's somewhere near Tveri. So that's the reason, that's the Kabbalistic reason. The Mekubalim, Yosef Karo and all the others, the Omekubalim, they were hoping to greet Eliyahu HaNavi, who's going to appear. The Gemara says Eliyahu HaNavi is going to appear in front of the Bezn HaGadol and to announce who the Mashiach is, and tomorrow Mashiach. That's the last pasuk in Malachi. That Eliyahu Navi is going to come to the Bez Nagol. So they wanted to greet Eliyahu Navi in Bez Nagol. So they convened and they all moved to the Galil, because that was a tradition. So then it's going to reconvene over there. And then the health reason why was because in Yerushalayim all the water that they drank was in wells. Now they still have old wells in Yerushalayim. So all the water was infested with bugs. So strictly speaking, the bugs were kosher. So they drank the water with the bugs, but it's unhealthy to have the bugs crawling around, live bugs crawling around in your stomach. So the water in Tzfat, the water in the northern, in the Galil, was more healthy. So that's the health reason why they moved to the Galil. And the Kabbalistic reason was because they wanted to greet the coming of the Melech HaMashiach. So the issue is whether you're allowed to filter the water on Shabbos. So some are of the opinion that these bugs are mutter. It's a question, really, whether the bugs, these copepods, where do they develop? They develop in the reservoir. So the reservoir is a bore, is a gigantic bore that collects all the water, but also has water coming in from rivers. So this is a question, where do these copepods come from? Do they come from the rivers, then the rosa, or did they develop over there in the reservoir? Then they should be mutter. So some claim the bugs are mutter. You're allowed to drink the water with the copepods. Even if you hold the bugs are rosa, it's not that clear that it's considered a niotamotza. If sometimes, some hours of the day, it is a more than 10% likelihood that you'll be eating a bug, and other hours of the day not. So it could be that that's not called a miyotamotze. And then even if you hold that it is also, it is a miyotamotze, the chayodim holds that since the goyim drink the water the way it is, it's not called a psolus. So the chayodim holds that it's not a violation of Borah and Shabbos. The Maram Shik disagrees. Maram Shik was a Talmud of, he was an outstanding Talmud of the Chasam Sefer. He thinks that it is Borah. And then there's a Sefer called Minchas Yitzchak, written by Dayan Weiss. He used to be Dayan in Manchester. Before the war, he lived in Hungary. Then after the war, he was a rabbi in Manchester. He wrote many Sfarim. And then they took him to be the head of the Eidah Haredes in Yerushalayim. So he has in his Jewish a Svara possibility that if the filter is built into your faucet, and whatever you turn on the water, not that you have to turn some gadget in order to filter the water. All the water that comes out is filtered, even if just washing dishes. You don't have to filter the water for the purpose of washing dishes or washing the tilis yadan, only if you want to drink the water. But if you have the filters built into the faucet in such a way that all the water is filtered, so you're not really doing an act of borer, you're just turning on the water. So he raises the possibility that maybe that's not prohibited on Shabbos. Maybe there's no malacha borer over there. So it's because of these four considerations, that's why many people would not be concerned. If they have the filter built into the faucet, they would not be concerned about the fact that it's filtering on Shabbos. The Gemara says that sometimes if a person eats bugs, he gets several times malchus. Gemara talks about the possibility. Four times malchus, five times malchus, six times malchus. What's going on over here? How do you get so many times malchus? So all of the Gaonim, most of the Gaonim and the Rishonim, Rashi and Tosfos and the Ramban and the Gaonim all learned the Gemara. You have to look in Chumash. How many times does it say you're not allowed to eat a sheretz? If the pasuk is repeated several times, they get malchus many times. And the Rambam is the one who came and he disagreed with this whole interpretation of the Gemara. The Rambam writes in the Sefer HaMitzvos. Rambam wrote a Sefer HaMitzvos to list up which are the 613 mitzvahs. So the first half of the Sefer HaMitzvahs, he gives you the 14 klolim, the 14 shoroshim, the guiding principles to determine what belongs in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, what does not belong in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. So Shorish Tes is one of the more famous ones, the ninth klal. So he says if you have a pasuk repeated several times, that should not be counted. How many times it's repeated. That's just for emphasis, it's repeated. But it's only one aveira, the same aveira. And you cannot give them many times malchus just because the same pasuk is repeated. It's only one mitzvah slaysesi. And the minyanah mitzvah, so there's only one time malchus. The Gemara says sometimes you eat a bug, you get four times malchus, five times malchus, six times malchus. No, that's a different thing. So the Rambam explains. There's one lav, you're not allowed to eat a sheretz hamayim if it swims. There's another lav, you're not allowed to eat a sheretz ha'ov if it flies. And there's another lav, you're not allowed to eat sheretz ha'oretz if it crawls on the earth. What if you have a sheretz that swims and it flies and it crawls on the earth? So they're three different, it's also because of three different reasons. So that's why you got three times malchus, because it's all three. The Raiva disagrees with the Rambam, and every so often he makes fun of the Rambam. So he calls the Rambam the collector. The Rambam collected all the Gemaras. Rambam did a fantastic job. He didn't have a computer. He collected all the Gemaras from all over the place, and he put everything in order. Then the Shulchan Aruch took the Rambam and he put it back out of order. But the Rambam did a fantastic job. Took all the Gemaras, Bavli, Rishalmi, the Tshuva Sakam, put everything in order. So the Raiva makes fun of the Rambam. He says, "Hamaasef hazeh asaf dvarim she'enom." The collector, the Rambam, he collected animals that don't exist. What do you mean? There's an animal that swims and it flies and it crawls on the dry land. There is no such thing. Why there is no such thing? There are things like that. There are ducks that fly and they swim and they crawl on the ground. What's so impossible? So they say from Agalba La Soloveitchik, he thought the Raivid was being masig on the Rambam. But how do you label the duck? Is it a sheretz ha'ov, or is it basically a bird, or is it basically a fish, a marine animal, or is it basically a dry land animal? True, it does all things. It does all three. It flies and it swims and it crawls on the ground. But you have to determine, is it a sheretz ha'ov, or is it a sheretz ha'man? The Rambam thinks it doesn't have to be labeled biologically. What category does it belong to in biology? If it swims and it crawls on the ground and it flies, that's all three of the above. So the Rambam takes that Gemara, and the Gemara says, you get four times Malchus, five times Malchus. Says, it's not that you have the same pasuk repeated many times. if it swims and it's not kosher, if it's a kosher fish, it's kosher. If it doesn't have snap of the kaskeses and it swims, then it's one lav. If it crawls, another lav. And if it flies, it's another lav. And then he says, and if it's spontaneously generated, then there's another lav. And don't tell me, the Rambam writes in the Sefer Mitzvahs, and don't give me your Baba Maisa that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. Anyone who knows anything about the ABC of biology knows that there is such a thing as spontaneous generation. So that's how the Rambam understood. He quotes from the Sifra, that's his understanding of the Gemara. The simple translation of the Gemara, the last Omid Beis, the last Daf and Perek El Treifus, that's the simple translation of the Gemara. The Gemara believed in spontaneous generation. So the Rambam writes, anybody knows about the ABC of biology knows that there is such a thing as spontaneous generation. Who disproved it? What's his name? Pasteur. Louis Pasteur proved that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. It's interesting, if there's no such thing as spontaneous generation, so how did life come into existence? So it must be that there's a God who created life. So the communists didn't believe in God. So they commissioned their scientists to disprove Pasteur. So for money you can do everything. So the scientists, the communist scientists, were paid money by the communist government in Russia years ago, long, long time ago now, communism. So they were paid money. So at that time, many rabbis were excited. Oh, Baruch Hashem, you finally saved the Rambam. The Rambam says that such a thing is spontaneous generation. So they just disproved Louis Pasteur. So I remember when I was in college, so I had Professor Soloveitchik. He was a younger brother of Rabbi Soloveitchik, who taught here. Two Rabbi Soloveitchiks taught. One was Rabbi Baron Soloveitchik, was the youngest brother. And Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik was the oldest child in the family. And Shmuel Soloveitchik was the second son in the family. So he taught chemistry. He lived across the street, and he used to learn the base manners all the time. He was a very learned fellow. And he used to teach chemistry. So that year, he was teaching chemistry for the non-science majors. I was not a science major. I started off as a math major. So I took his course. So he was talking about, he gave the history of chemistry. Instead of giving the hardcore chemistry, he gave a lot of the history of chemistry. So he was explaining, what a tragedy, because they don't believe in God, and they commissioned their scientists to disprove Pasteur, who was 100% correct. So the rabbis are rejoicing that you saved the Rambam based on the Apikursim. That's not ridiculous. The Rambam is wrong. Pasteur proved that there's no such thing as spontaneity. The Rambam made a mistake. The question is though, but the Gemara sounds like it says like that. The Gemara says if you have fish, a lot of fish have a lot of worms in them. So if you have, I remember about 20 years ago, Somebody in the OU office showed me, one of the rabbis showed me, the United States government, Department of Agriculture, upon request, will sell you a brochure about the health, about the nutritional value of different vegetables that are grown in America. So they tell you about a certain vegetable that has a certain nutritional value, that it has protein in it. How do vegetables have protein? Because they have so many bugs in them. So that's considered nutritional value of the vegetable, because we know that has our bug. If it's too infested with bugs, so the government will close down the factory. Too infested is not acceptable. But a little bit infested is a mila. The government, the federal government, includes it in the value of this vegetable. So the Gemara, there are a lot of fish that have worms in them. And apparently the worms are healthy. The Gemara has one of the Amoraim on the last daf in Eilat Treifas in Chulin. One of the Amoraim told his mother, don't show me where the worms are. Just give me the fish with the worms and it's healthy. If you're going to show me the worms, I'm gonna not want to eat it. So just give me the fish with the healthy worms and I'll be happy to eat it. So the Gemara sounds like it says that the fish turns into worm, which is ridiculous. The fish doesn't turn into worm. There are eggs there. There are eggs of the worm that hatch and they turn into worms. But it's not that the fish turns into worm. So this is a problem. How do you deal with this Gemara? So in the 1700s, after Louis Pasteur proved that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation, there was an Italian Talmud Chacham, Yitzchak Lamprenti. His descendants still live in Italy, and their family name is Lamprenti. Well, we were touring Italy a couple of years ago in the summertime, so they were singing their piyutim for us. They have different igunim there, different piyutim that no one ever heard of. So the Lamprenti brothers were giving us a whole Chazanim's concept. So Rabbi Yitzchak Lamprenti wrote an encyclopedia that's called Pachad Yitzchak. So he raises this issue. Now that we know that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation, what should we do with this Gemara that the Gemara says you're permitted to eat the fish with the worms in it because the worms didn't come? You're not allowed to eat the worms in the stomach of the fish because those worms were swallowed, they were ingested by the fish from outside. But the worms that are in the flesh of the fish, those you may eat, because it's the literal translation of the Gemara is that the flesh of the fish converted into worms. There ain't no such thing. Fish can't turn into worms. So what do you do with the Gemara? So some rabbanim say we should not follow the Gemara. We shouldn't be allowed to eat the worms. They say they asked Rav Moshe Feinstein years ago, and he said that it's mutter. So they asked him to write a tshuva. He said, what do you mean write a tshuva? That's baby stuff. It says in Shulchan Aruch, there's nothing to write about. You write a tshuva when there's a shaila. There's no shaila, it's a din and shulchan aruch, and a gemara. But they said, but the shaila is that now we don't assume that it's spontaneously generated. So he says, so what? The gemara said the worms are mutter, he didn't want to write a tshuva. So years later, after he passed away, one of the talmidim wrote, several of the people who were present wrote it up. So the others didn't believe them. About 15 years ago, there was a whole hullabaloo that the Igud HaRabbanim, a group of mainly Hasidish HaRabbanim, put an issa that you're not allowed to eat certain fish from the five lakes, what they call the Great Lakes, because they have a lot of worms in them. But the Gemara says the worms are mutter. No, but the Gemara says the only worms are mutter are the worms that the flesh of the fish turned into worms. These worms are all ingested from outside. Who said so? The scientists say so. But the scientists say that there's no such thing as fish turning into worms. So that we don't believe them. But what they said, the worms in this fish came from outside, that we believe them, so therefore you're not allowed to eat those worms. So at that time, one of the rabbanim in Europe published a whole pamphlet, Anochi Tolas, that's a pasuk, Anochi Tolas, David HaMelech says, he's humble, I'm a worm, I don't deserve to be used the title of a human being. So he wrote a whole sefer about this. So this is a shaila, how do you deal with this gemara? So Rabbi Mendel Kasher, whom I always thought was a modern thinker, he used to work with manuscripts and Tshuvas Hagoyim and everything. He's the one who originally made the Erev in Manhattan years ago. So Rabbi Mendel Kasher has several Svarim. He did all the work on, most of the work on Torah Shlema. So he has his own sefer called Divrei Menachem. So he he adopts the most unlikely position of all. He says, we don't accept what the scientists say. We do believe in spontaneous generation. How can you say like that? It's been accepted already for so many years that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. There's a sefer that's called Dor Revi. The author was a great-grandson, the fourth generation of the Chassam Sefer. He writes in his introduction, he was the first great-grandchild named after his great-grandfather, Moshe Sefer, the Chassam Sefer. His name was Moshe. What was his second name? I forgot. He was a rabbi in Kloisenberg. He was a big Zionist, and he gave up his rabbanus and he moved to Eretz Yisrael way before Hakamas HaMedina in the 1800s. So he has a sefer on Chulin, Dor Revi, very open-minded, modern thinker, the way he analyzes the Gemara with the Tosfos, is a very open thinker. So he has a famous introduction to his sefer on Chulin, which is really an introduction to all of Torah Sheba'al Peh. So he has a couple of lines that he's famous for. One of the lines he's famous for is, if you're on a desert island and there are only two things to eat to stay alive, either human flesh, there are dead bodies there, either eat human flesh or eat chazer. So human flesh is a machlekes, whether it's macholas asuras or not. But he says, and the chazer is for sure treif. So if you have to save your life by violating an avera, so you should do the lesser avera. So eating human flesh, the Rambam holds is an isa derais, an isa rese. Eating chazer and avela is an isa loisese. But he has his chiddush that since it's mekubal by all the civilized people, that cannibalism is worse than eating an avelas, so the less ravera is to eat an avela. So there are those who jumped them on about that. Just because the civilized world decided that cannibalism, eating flesh from a human being, is worse than avela, so we should follow, the halacha should follow that. So that's one famous thing that he has that the people are not too happy about. And then he has about this also. How do we deal with dinim in the Gemara that were based on mistakes in science? He claims that the simple pshat in the Gemara is that the worms and the fish are muta because they're spontaneously generated. So the fish is a kosher fish and the fish turn into a worm, so it's muta. Can we still rely on that kula or not? So he quotes, there's a contradiction between different passages. Do we follow a psak halacha if it's in error? Just parenthetically, Herman Wouk, who just put out a new book at the age of 97, all about Moses. They sent me a copy. I don't know why they think I'm interested. Simon Schuster sent me a copy. I got it last week in the mail. So Herman Wouk used to teach here in the yeshiva. So he told us before my time, a few years before me. So he told the students that the theme of his book, The Cain Mutiny, The Cain was a boat, I think, and there was a mutiny, there's a rebellion against the head of the boat, the main skipper on the boat, the captain of the boat. So the captain was wrong. The captain gave order, the captain was wrong. So the theme of the book is based on Rashi and Chumash, that al yamin shu small val small shemin. Authority is binding even when it's an error. That's what he told the students. So the students broke his heart, and they told him that's not pshat and Rashi. With the Rabbanim, you're not supposed to listen to the Rabbanim if they made a mistake. Ayin in shusmol, the Ramban explains in the Sefer Mitzvahs, afilu nirim b'enecha ayin shusmol. Even if the layman thinks that the psak of the rabbi doesn't make sense, he should listen. But if you know for sure that it's wrong, you're not allowed to listen to authority when it's an error. That's the first Mishnah in Horius. If someone knows that Bez Nagadol made a mistake, so he's not allowed to follow the Bez Nagadol. So this is a famous contradiction that Rashi and Chumash quotes when the Sifrei L'Sosim Mekavadovash Yagid L'Chayom in Ismol, you have to follow the Psak of the Rabbanim even if it's an error. And then the Mishnah says in Hurry is the first Mishnah says not so. So the Ramban is the first one who raises this issue. Ramban and Sefer Mitzvahs, how do these two jive together? So this Sefer Dor Revi in his famous introduction to all of Torah Sheba'al Peh, he gives you an answer. So I don't think it makes sense, but this is what he says. He says, if when the rabbi gave the psak, in that generation it was already known that it's incorrect. The rabbi didn't know the facts. He didn't know the scientific facts. So psak like that is an error. A psak and error is not binding. But if in the days of the Tanoim it was accepted, science, that there is such a thing as spontaneous generation. It took till the 1700s till Louis Pasteur disproved it. So since in that generation that was considered scientifically correct, so that psak is binding even after it's discovered that it was a mistake. I personally don't understand why this should make a difference. If it's wrong, it's wrong. If you don't listen to a psak, if it's wrong, so what's the difference if it was wrong in their generation, they were oblivious of the correct facts, or we discovered 17 centuries later that it was wrong. If it's wrong, it's wrong. I don't understand. But that's what he thinks the Teretz is. He writes in his Sefer, we still eat the worms and the fish, because since in the days of the Talmud, this was considered scientifically correct, that there is such things by Tanya Jerusha, even though it was disproven later on, the psak still remains. So very shvach. Others interpret the Gemara differently. When the Gemara says you're allowed to eat the fish because the flesh converted into worms, so Rav Shlomo Zalman was a modern thinker. He has everything with common sense. So he says, nah, the Gemara didn't mean that. The Gemara meant to say it's not visible to the naked eye that there was a worm there before. First, there was a microscopic egg in the fish. If you would look, you wouldn't see it. Then the egg developed into a worm in the fish. That's what it means, that the flesh of the fish turned into a worm. It means that there was an egg there, larva, and the egg hatched and it turned into a worm. So that's considered as if the flesh of the fish turned into a worm. The question is that now we know that there are worms in the fish that were visible before the fish even swallowed it. There's a whole, the experts printed in all the books that there are certain cycles that this animal in the ocean, this animal eats that, the animal eats that animal, and these worms are visible months ago, and then was swallowed by one animal, and that animal is eaten by another animal, eaten by another animal, and then it finally lands up on a whitefish that we eat. And this worm was visible a long time ago. It wasn't like Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, that the worms that you find in the fish were microscopic, and they only became visible to the naked eye when they were in the fish. It's not always the case. A lot of times, the worms were visible to the naked eye before they even got into the fish. How can it be mutter? And then it says in Shulchan Aruch, they quote from the Rishonim, if you find the worm in the stomach of the fish, the Gemara says you're not allowed to eat it because it clearly came from outside. The fish ingested the worm from the water, from the outside. But if you find it in the flesh of the fish, even though you see a hole between the stomach and the flesh, and you see there are worms crawling in and crawling out, the worms that are in the flesh you're allowed to eat, even though it started off in the stomach of the fish. And then it says, the Beis Yosef says, the worms in the stomach you're not allowed to eat misafik, you wouldn't get malchus. Misafik, maybe if you would leave them alone, maybe they would have penetrated to go through and through to the flesh. So you see from the Rishonim, it's a different story. It's not that you assume that the flesh of the fish turned into worms. Clearly, the fish swallowed worms in the stomach. If the worms succeed in penetrating through the membrane of the stomach into the flesh of the fish, then it becomes part of the fish. The Allah declares the worm becomes part of the fish. So any given worm that you find in the stomach, you don't know. Would this have succeeded in penetrating through the membrane or not? So the misafik, the Beis Yosef said, prima godum, what's the Beis Yosef? Misafik, you shouldn't eat any worms in the stomach because maybe this worm would never have penetrated through and through. Some point out, what are we talking about worms? It's a din that nevela sheni ruya lager is muta b'achila. The pasuk says, you're not allowed to eat l'secho kol nevela, you're not allowed to eat nevela. Nevela means an animal that didn't have a proper shechita. Then it continues, lager asher b'sherecha titnana b'achala amochal anochi. You should give it to a ger toishav. A ger tzedek is a non-Jew who converted, so he has to observe kashrus like a Jew. But a ger toshav is a non-Jew who accepted upon himself to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs ben enot, so he can eat non-kosher food. So a ger shav sharachet tednana b'chol, he can give the nevela meat to a ger toshav, he's allowed to eat it. So the Gemara understands from that pasuk, nevela haruya lager kruya nevela. Nevela is only prohibited, it's only osa b'achila, if it's roya l'achila. What if I have a piece of ham, and I left it out of the refrigerator for 2 months, and it's rotten and it's spoiled and it tastes awful? So in the Torah, it's permissible to eat it. It's a machlokes whether there's even an issa derabbanan. So we paskin in Shulchan Aruch, we paskin like the Rosh, that it's forbidden mid derabbanan to eat it, because if you sit and eat it, so you demonstrate that as far as you're concerned, actually, as far as you're concerned, it is roi l'achila sodom. But in the Torah, even the Rosh agrees that it's mutter. The Ramban holds even mid derabbanan it's mutter. There is no issa derabbanan. So how can you say that worms are rosa? The worms are not roi l'achila sodom. If you would put worms on a plate, someone would be interested in eating the worms. It's not roi l'achila sodom. So the Minchas Chinuch in the quotes earlier, Poskim, say, That's the pasuk. The pasuk says that worms are rasa, bugs are rasa, flies, ants, so on. All these bugs are rasa, even though it's not roi lachilus on. That's the gzeris of pasuk. There is no kula here. A lot of the red cherries are not naturally red. A lot of them have carmine. Carmine is artificial coloring put in to make it extremely red. And the carmine comes from bugs. It's some kind of an excretion that comes from non-kosher bugs. All the bugs are non-kosher. It comes from non-kosher bugs. So some of the rabbanim said it's okay. The carmine doesn't make anything treif because the bug is not roi lachila. What kind of a joke is that? All bugs are not roi lachila. That's what the pasuk says. You're not allowed to eat the bugs. In the last perek in Psachim, the Mishnah says, before you eat the mara, you have to dip it into charoses. What is that ritual all about? So the Tanoim have a machlokes. So some Tanoim say charoses is a mitzvah midrabon, and zechet to something, reminiscent of something, either zechet letit, or zechet letapuach, or zechet ledam, that they spilled Jewish blood, whatever, three different explanations. And the other Tanoim hold note that dipping the mara into the charoses is not a ritual at all. It's for hygienic purposes because we're concerned that there may be live bugs in the maror, and you want to dip it in the charoses to kill the bugs. If you kill it, so it's healthier. So Tosfos says, what do you mean? But bugs are rasa. So Tosfos shows from the Gemara in Eilat Treifas, the last two dafim in Eilat, last daf and half in Eilat Treifas about bugs in the water, and bugs on vegetables, and bugs on fruits. So the Gemara says sometimes the bugs in the vegetables Amuta b'achila. They're not always awesome. Yeah. Has to be sheretz ha-sheretz al-ha-aretz. Has to have been crawling on the ground. So if the thing was attached to the ground when the bug became visible to the naked eye, then it's called sheretz ha-sheretz al-ha-aretz. If the apples were detached from the ground and then the egg developed into a bug, so then it's only off if it's pirish, not pirish now. So sometimes you have bugs on fruits and vegetables that will be muta. But that's rare cases. There is a company that's called Bodek who will sell you lettuce that they claim they have checked it and it doesn't have any bugs. So they don't claim that there are no bugs at all. If you take enough bags of lettuce, you will find a bug. They just experimented. There are different procedures to clean lettuce and to clean different vegetables. So they start off with lettuce that has a miut hamatzui, has more than a 10% chance that you're going to be eating a bug. And they wash it till they come to the realization that the likelihood of the customer eating the bug just became a miut chain of matzah. So that's what their hashgach is. They don't say that there are no bugs at all. They just say they made it into a miut chain of matzah and therefore you're allowed to eat it. Sometimes the bodek doesn't do any washing at all. They just know that certain farms, certain seasons of the certain parts of the year, is going to be a mere chen matzah. So they'll put on the label, this is checked by bodek. They didn't wash anything, but they know in this farm, this season of the year, it's a mere chen matzah. So that's all the halacha says. If it's a mere chen matzah, either less than 10%, the way it's usually assumed, or less than 7%. According to the way Rabbi Yashiv says, then you don't have to be, you have a right to assume that you're not going to be the lucky winner, you're not going to be eating a bug. In Eretz Yisrael, it's very common that in the sack of flour, you'll find bugs. So that's why in Eretz Yisrael, they say since it's a miut hamatzu, it's very common, so you have to sift the flour before you want to bake, it's a big pain in the neck, before you want to bake chalas, a cake, or cookie. In America, it's a miut chein hamatzu, it's very rare. How many, let's say, I have a sack of flour in America, it's mir chena matzah, and then I find one bug. So my mechuyev now to sift the flour just because I found one bug, so the din is no. How many bugs do you have to find in a given sack of flour to say that I have a latest asafek? So the Gemara has a machlekes, whether two or three times constitute a chazaka. What does it mean a chazaka? It means when a woman has a baby boy, the boy dies after the bris, obviously he had we don't know, maybe he had hemophilia. Maybe he didn't, maybe he died from some other cause. They didn't know, in the days of the mother, they had no way of telling. So if two boys die from the same family, it's carried by the women, not by the men. The Ramah didn't know that, the Mechaba knew that. The hemophilia is only carried by the mothers, not by the fathers. So if two sisters Each one has a baby who died after the bris. So that's a machlokes hatanoim. When they say betray zimli havi chazaka betfazim, three times, it has to happen three times. What do you mean havi chazaka? Chazaka means we establish that this is it. No. How many times does a strange thing have to repeat itself that it should be considered even a latest asafik that maybe there's a problem? If there's a suffix, a sex fake of sakonis nefashis, you don't do the bris mila. But just because one baby died, that's not even called the suffix.
If you find two or three bugs, let's say a sack of flour, then you could just remove them, you don't have to check the rest of the flour?
No, so if you find either two bugs or three bugs, that's a shayla how we paskin, then you have to sift the whole sack of flour. You're not allowed to use that sack until you sift it.
So not one bug.
If you only find one bug, you throw out the one bug and you don't worry about it. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's a miotamatsi. So even if you don't find any bugs, you always have to sift all the flour to make sure. You have to filter the flour, sift the flour, whatever you call it, to make sure you don't have bugs, because there, tak is a miotamatsi. The bug story was always a problem. In Europe, it was always an issue. There it wasn't invented in recent years. What changed in America was that the government no longer permits the pesticides. Years ago, when I was a little boy, no one had any bugs. There was nothing to discuss. But during my lifetime, around 40 years ago or so, 40, 50 years ago, that's when the government prohibited the use of the pesticides. And now we have everything has bugs in it. So that's why they started with this Bodic and so on. Okay, good luck on your Chazorah and your midterm.